Catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world. Don't be afraid to try the greatest sport around.
Catch a wave.
Catch a wave.
Those who don't.
Wake up, Denver. That was Bo Mitchell, not Mike Love.
Or Brian Wilson.
You battle out, turn around and raise a baby.
That's what a song.
A great song. You know what this reminds me of?
What?
Route 66.
Tell me about Route 66. What do you mean by that? I'm Bo Mitchell. This is Bob Belch. You're listening to You Get the Blessing, and I'm not singing ever again. What is Route 66?
Well, the group that's been listening for the last few weeks knows that at Highline, we're doing kind of a fun long-term study called Route 66. And if you're not familiar with it, the Bible actually has 66 books in it. So what we're doing is every week I'm teaching through one entire book of the Bible so that by the time we're done, a person would know everything that's, in the Bible. And we're doing it kind of having a fun time sort of putting it within the framework of the old Route 66 TV show. So Beach Boys fit right in there. Boy, those guys were listening to that song.
Absolutely. And if you don't know this fact, nobody teaches the Bible quite like Bob Belch. So please, folks, 10:30 this morning, you'll be comfortable. You'll be welcome. Come in, pick up right where they are. And it's pretty fascinating that a guy would have the educational background of Bob and the intellect to take his congregation through a book of the Bible every Sunday. So within a year, you too will be an expert. So come to church, 10:30 Highline, just south of the old Shepler's there off of I-25. And so
an orchard. I think a couple of times I've said a Quebec, didn't I?
Anyway, no.
We've got people lost all over the city this morning.
You did.
Okay, south of Orchard.
I thought maybe you moved. But each week, You Get the Blessing exists to introduce you to special guests that we feel like are changing the world for Christ. And Mateen, how do you say your last name?
Alas,
you're here.
In English, yeah.
Alas, we have Mateen. Mateen and I have met together have a great mutual friend in Marv Morrison, and welcome to the program, Mateen.
Thank you so much.
And Bob, you're in for a treat today. Well-spoken, sharp, handsome, isn't he?
I'm ready. He's got hair,
Hair,
we're both
smile.
Jealous of his hair this morning.
So where are you from, Mateen?
I was raised in Saudi Arabia.
You don't look like it.
Most recently live in Colorado Springs.
So you look like you were raised in Dallas, Texas. So
well,
what's up
father,
with that?
My father was born and raised in Syria as a Sunni Muslim in the Golan Heights area. Came across to the States after he'd finished his college years in Damascus and came on a scholarship to the States, to the University of Wisconsin, and met my mother there. She's English Germanic background, so I take after her lighter skin complexion, blue eyes. The rest
hair,
of my siblings, though,
hair like women have. You know, no, go ahead. No.
And my siblings are all darker complected, dark brown eyes, dark brown hair. So I tell them I'm the white sheep of the family.
The white sheep of the family. So, wow, what was that like where you were growing up?
Well, we were all born, us kids were all born here in the States, but then we moved over to Saudi Arabia when we were young. My dad worked for Aramco Oil Company in the east coast of Arabia. And it was a blast growing up there. You know, as kids, wherever you land, that's home. And so we never thought it was exotic. We just loved it back in the 50s and 60s.
And what was the climate of faith around you the whole time you're growing up?
Oh, of course, it's very conservative Wahhabi Islam. My father, by the time we were growing up, by the time I reached my preteen years, he was a nominal Muslim. So he was not practicing, not going to the mosque, not praying even, as far as we knew. But of course, we were immersed in a society that was very, very conservative Islam, practicing multiple times a day.
So you embraced all that?
Well, when I was about 12 or 13, I saw Islam as my identity from my dad, but we were never taken to the mosque or anything, so I just learned what I could about Islam from my friends and the Saudi and other Middle Eastern Muslim friends that I had growing up.
So if you just tuned in, our guest today on You Get the Blessing is Mateen Elas, and mutual friend and Marv Morrison introduced us, and we've become friends, and he's got quite a story we're getting ready to hear. So tell us what took place next in the journey.
Well, I turned away from Islam because the religion seemed to me so dry, and the picture of Allah in Islam is a very, very remote, distant, dry, demanding God. And it just didn't seem to me like if a God existed that he would be like that. So
when you say dry, you're going to have to explain what you mean to me.
Well, Islam is a religion of rules. It's a legal religion. And so there's no sense of a closeness possible with God relationally. There's just the idea that if you do all that God commands, it may be that he will smile upon you by granting you blessings or gifts or a passage key into heaven. But there's no idea that you will have any kind of relationship with the God of love who created you in order to care for you and bring you into his family.
So the whole emphasis is on you.
It's on you.
What do you do? What can you produce?
Right.
How are you performing?
Right. Yeah. Whereas the Bible is a book that seeks to teach human beings about who God is and how he loves us and how he wants to bring us back into fellowship with himself. The Quran is a book not about who Allah is, but about what Allah requires of human beings. So it lists basically the responsibilities of human beings in order to try to please a God whom they themselves will never know personally.
And so when did that start turning for you?
For me, around age 13. And I started looking elsewhere. Because of my family background, I couldn't really turn to Christianity or Judaism. So I looked eastward and became very interested in and then involved in Eastern mysticism, classical yoga, and pursued that until age 20, which is when I met the Lord. At age 19, I went over to India. I had a chance to go study under this old guru who was the master of the fellow that I'd been learning classical yoga from. And that, for me, was a turning point. I was in Bombay, or Mumbai, as it's now called, in his ashram studying, and was licensed to teach classical yoga. But that was, for me, a turning point, because the questions I asked this guru, he had no sufficient answers for, at least that were satisfactory to me. And so that kind of left me on a downward spiral spiritually. I'd sort of been to the apex of classical yoga, and I had two questions. Did God exist? And who is Jesus?
And Bob, you had some of this going on in your conversion experience, didn't you? Asking a lot of questions about this, that, and the other.
Well, I was a skeptic, you know, up until, you know, my probably sophomore year in college. But yes, I didn't really pursue, I pursued hedonism. That was my religion. And
it's a common one.
And yeah, until I started just feeling like something was really missing. And then my buddy and I had decided, well, let's go every week to a different, like either a mosque or a church or a temple or something. And anyway, the first week of our little experience, we actually ended up in a very solid, great church in Kansas City called Colonial Presbyterian. And I decided I didn't want to go anywhere else. And he decided he wanted to sleep on Sunday. So anyway, but
do I know who that is?
You don't.
Okay.
You don't know who it is. Anyway, so I didn't pursue things the way you did.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So back to your
journey. That was too hard.
So back to your journey, Mateen. Next was what?
Well, the next year, after casting around and feeling rather empty, I met some Christians, high school and college age American kids living in Saudi Arabia, children of employees of the oil company. And I was a philosophy major at Stanford at the time, so I had was amassing a number of arguments trying to prove or disprove the existence of God. And I tried out my arguments on them, and they were just very gracious in listening and responding to me. And I would ask them, why do you believe in God? And they would tell me about having a relationship with God. And that just went completely over my head. I was looking for, as we would have said back in the 60s and 70s, a blackboard proof. Just you write out the premises and then you argue to a conclusion, therefore God exists. And that was my approach. And they were saying to me, hey, you know, we just know God exists. We don't care what you're arguing. We know him. And that was completely foreign to me. But it was through them and then through meeting other college students, believers, and watching them that I saw there were two things from a human vantage point that drew me to Christ. The first was seeing the evidence of a real solid kind of love, care for other people in these Christians that I hadn't seen in any other community. And so I would, as I got to know some of them, I would ask them, what is it that made you love that person like that, do that kind deed for that individual? And they would talk about Jesus in their hearts. And I'd say, I'm not interested in the religious stuff. I just want to know where you get the power to love people like that. And they kept talking about Jesus. So I thought, okay, I need to learn about Jesus. So I asked, you know, where do I find out about him? You know, well, the Bible. And I didn't know much about the Bible. I knew that there was an Old and New Testament. And so they said, well, read the New Testament. I thought, that still seemed a little big to me. So I said, well, any place in particular? Yeah, they said, read the Gospels. I said, okay, Gospels. So I said, what are Gospels? So somebody gave me their Bible, opened it to Matthew and said, start here, read till you get to the end of a book called John, and you'll know about the life of Jesus. So I thought, okay, that I can do that. So I sat down and started reading. It took me about 3 days. I wasn't in a big rush. And this was all new to me. And it was an American Standard Bible. That's, you know, just one step past the Garden of Eden, you know, in terms of English language, old King James stuff. But the message was so powerful to me of who Jesus is that shines through the Gospels that I remember when I got to the end of John, I said to myself, I never come across anyone like this guy Jesus pictured here in the Bible. And if there's ever been someone worth giving your life to follow, it would have to be this man, Jesus. And then I thought, if he were alive today, I would go find him and ask him if he would take me as a student. I was still thinking like a guru and a student of a guru. Of course, I learned later that's what...
And you found out he was alive and yeah, you could be a student.
Exactly right, yeah. I discovered that, you know, with the gospel stories, if the resurrection really happened, if Easter was true, then indeed Jesus is alive and is able to hear my plea. He might not answer, but at least I could make the plea and see what would happen.
Quick explanation about what he just said there. If Easter is real, then go, Bob.
Well, Easter is when we celebrate the resurrection of Christ. So, you know, Jesus is crucified on Good Friday. He is thoroughly dead. You know, there are some goofy explanations that try and say, well, he wasn't really dead, but laid in a solid rock tomb with a 1.5 to 2-ton stone rolled downhill in front of it. And 3 days later, the stone is removed. The tomb is not empty. The grave clothes he was wrapped in are empty, and people start experiencing encounters with Christ who has risen from the dead, proving everything he's been teaching him for 3 years. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of an important event in our lives.
Absolutely.
A risen Lord.
The uh-huh. most important event in history, actually. Yeah. So, yeah.
So I became convinced, as Bob was just saying, that the alternate arguments to try to explain the empty tomb just didn't make as much sense as the biblical explanation, the one that the gospel writers were giving. So I thought, this is way too important a decision for me to put off or to pass on. So I thought, if Jesus isn't who the texts say he is, then I haven't lost anything by trying. But if he is who he says he is, or the texts say he is, and I just pass by, this could be the worst decision of my life. So I with my then girlfriend, Christian girlfriend, sat down. I asked her, you know, how do you pray? She said, just talk to Jesus like he's sitting here right next to us and tell him what's on your heart and that you want to know him and ask him to come into your life. I said, I want to do that. So sat down and did that September 15th, 1975.
And that's why our program exists, really, folks. If you listeners seem like it's too late for me or I'm too bad a person to ever be accepted by Jesus and ever be able to enter into a relationship with him, Bob is in the habit of saying, wrong again, Bible breath. Oh, wait, no. Yeah. That's me that says that.
Excuse you said that.
Wrong again, folks. God stands at the door and knocks, the scripture says, and waits for us to respond, and this is open to everyone. So if you have never really even explored this, do what Mateen did. He sat down and read all the Gospels. I would say even read just the book of John over and over. Would you, Bob?
Well, I think either one is great, you know. And I like what you did simply because, you know, if you read Matthew, for instance, you really get more of the chronological, historical view of him. And John, as you know, wrote much later than the other writers to supplement what they hadn't quite put in. So 90% of what is in John is not in the other three. But you might, just understand if you are unfamiliar with the Bible that the first three Gospels are quite similar. So you'll hear the same stories, but there's nothing wrong with approaching it that way. When I was, again, skeptical and trying to figure this out, they said, we'll read the Gospel of John. So for me, the Gospel of John was the first big, exposure to Jesus. And but they're all great. So that's a great approach, I think, to encourage people to do that.
I was so ignorant. I hadn't been raised in church at all. I hadn't been raised with any kind of Bible stories. Yeah. All I knew was the general cultural thing about Jesus, the little baby in the manger, and also for me, the Gospels, all four Gospels were completely fresh material, and I think anyone who comes to the Bible saying, I want simply to try to understand as much as I can understand of what it's saying, will get the message of the Gospel. It's self-confirming.
The other thing I think that I've experienced through the years is, when you encourage someone to read the Bible and their response might be, well, I don't believe it. It's just something, written by men. I've learned to ask one question, which is, have you ever read it? And the vast majority of people that say, I don't believe it, have never read it. They're just parroting something that someone has taught them or that they've heard. So again, I like, encouraging them, saying, well, hey, you ought to read it first before you decide you don't believe it. So,
sure. And even just from the vantage point of saying, if you want to understand something about the foundations of Western civilization, if you've never read the Bible, you need to read it just so you can understand the kind of world that you have grown up in. And then it will speak for itself.
So, Mateen, tell us how you became involved in the Voice of Truth, which is what you're doing with your life now.
Well, Voice of the Truth is a ministry dedicated to getting the gospel message to the Arabic-speaking people. Because of my own background growing up in the Middle East and with my father being a Syrian Muslim, I have a great love for Muslims generally, for Arab peoples specifically. And my father was not at all pleased when I became a Christian, even though he was a nominal Muslim. And rejected me, tried to convince me I'd made a big mistake, and then kicked me out of the family, and took about 15 years for him to come around to be reconciled to me. But my heart longs with love for the Muslim world that they will come to know Jesus.
In a similar way that you did, so you try to now present them with the Gospels and...
Well, that's what Voice of the Truth does. My particular ministry is with the American Christian world or the non-Muslim world, trying to help Americans understand the challenges and claims of Islam and what kind of impact the Islamic world would have on the United States if we opened every avenue for Islam to advance in the United States. And then among Christians, I try to teach Christians how to share the gospel effectively with Muslims.
Give us a couple of tips on that. And one thing I'd love just to hear your response to, obviously, there is both common ground, but some problems from the perspective that Muslims do believe in Jesus, but they don't believe what, you know, we would believe about him. So how do you approach that? I mean, give us a couple of tips on how you help people share their faith with a Muslim.
Sure. It's true that Islam, the Quran has a number of potential bridges to the Christian faith in terms of stories that are really mirrored in the Quran. The originals, of course, are in the Bible. And so you can use those as stepping stones. For instance, the Quran speaks of Abraham as the friend of God. The Bible, Old Testament, also speaks of Abraham as a friend of God. And it's a wonderful conversation. Most Muslims are eager to talk about their faith and to hear what you as a Westerner believe. They're surprised, actually, to discover that there are Westerners or Americans who actually believe something deeply, religiously, you know, as Christians. They think most are this caricature of California, what they see on the old TV shows, Baywatch and everything. They think that's what it means to be a Christian. So when they find a Christian who actually believes the Bible and is willing to talk about it, many times they're thrilled and they want to learn what you as a Christian actually believe. And it's very true, the Islamic Jesus, Isa of the Quran, is a very watered-down version of the biblical Jesus. But you can use the commonalities as a jumping-off point. I've never met a Muslim convert, and this includes me also, who failed to mention either the love of Christ or the love of the Christian community as a huge component of their own conversion. Because the God of Islam is not a God of love. And the Muslim community is a community that is called to love its own, but to be harsh to the non-Muslim world. So when a Muslim sees a Christian who is actually acting in love towards the Muslim, whom he thinks is an enemy, and he says, how is it that you are loving me? Because I'm supposed to hate you as an enemy. Why are you showing love to me? It gives us a great opportunity to talk about how God loved the world while we were yet sinners, while we were yet enemies of God. Christ died for us. It's the message of the love of God, the sacrificial love of God seen in Jesus Christ, which breaks down the most barriers.
So love, just like it normally is the key to breaking down the barriers and creating a common ground and removing this fear mm-hmm. they may have of us. Mm-hmm. So what if they're, before we ever have a chance to do that, what if there's confusion, unrest, like there is in the world right now? Now what do we do?
Well, Jesus tells us that our calling is to go out into the world and to be agents of reconciliation, ambassadors of his love, even where others feel like their calling is to try to eliminate us. That doesn't prevent us from following what Jesus commands us to do. We're to be, of course, wise as serpents, but innocent as doves. So we don't want to be reckless in how we share the gospel or in where we choose to focus our time and energy. But Christians have no warrant to sit back on our heels and do nothing or wait for the world to come to us. We're called to go out into the world.
So do you see a possibility of a peaceful coexistence, or do you see that we have to evangelize and convert and basically say, what you have faith in is not really the full package. We don't buy it. We have a message beyond that.
Well, both Islam and Christianity are expansionist, evangelistic religions. Both see as their vision that the whole world will one day come under the sway either of the gospel for Christians or under Sharia law for Muslims. So the only way that there can be peaceful coexistence is if Christians are cold towards Christ, and if Muslims are cold towards Allah, there's, you know, not pursuing their religious faith. So if you're secularized, you might find the capacity for peaceful coexistence between Christian groups and Muslim groups. But if both are committed to their own faith, then there's no possibility of peaceful coexistence. Both will try to convert the other. The Christians, of course, through love in peaceful means. The Muslims, through their proclamation, but then also through the use of force if people do not submit. The word Islam, of course, means submission. And the goal of Islam is that the whole human race submit to Allah.
So that doesn't sound like a happy ending in store there.
Well, Jesus said, in this world you'll have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I've overcome the world.
So your message then today would be, keep trying, do it the right way. Don't compromise what we believe. Don't attack, but be tastefully aggressive.
Yeah, I'd say the first thing for Christians is make sure that you remember your first love, Jesus, and then take him into the world with you and introduce others to him.
No wonder it's complicated, Bob.
Yeah, I think I was just thinking too, so often I do think maybe believers talk about Christianity, which is immediately a barrier. And you know, I think our friend Carl that we talked about, Medeiros, is so, you know, talk about Jesus. Just, you know, stay focused.
Absolutely.
On Jesus, and then you've got some common ground. You haven't built an instant wall there. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Bateen, you're a good man. You're doing a good work. Voice of the Truth. How do we find you? On the internet?
Well, you can go to VOPG.org, and that's Voice of the Truth's other name in Arabic, Voice of Preaching the Gospel, VOPG.org. But if you go there, you'll find the site is all in Arabic, except for one little green button that says donate here or something like that, donate now. The rest is all in Arabic, so it might not be too helpful to most non-Arabs.
It's not going to work for me, I can tell you that. But so you're saying you've just kind of isolated that donation button, and that's all
that's,
we need to
that's
talk
all
about.
Is in English.
All right. Well, do that if you can, listeners, and help Mateen Ilas as he goes about his work with Voice of the Truth in a very complicated world that's taking Jesus to Islam. And we'll see where that goes. But
amen.
Bless you and everything you're doing. Bob, thanks for another great
thanks,
show.
Bro. Thank you. And I'm going to head off to a Highline. And I know you are too. And I'll see you next Sunday also.
10:30 Highline this morning, Route 66. Thanks for listening to You Get the Blessing.
Get your way. Get your way. Those who don't just have to put it down. You battle out, turn around and raise. And baby, that's all there is to the coastline craze. You gotta catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world.